We began a brand new series together on the book of Ecclesiastes, and it's not an in-depth study, but what it will be is we're going to take some themes from the book of Ecclesiastes and talk about them through the month of November. We had a little fun this morning. There's a running joke, apparently, in the praise team. They'll come in, they'll run through the songs and kind of get a feel for them, make some adjustments, and then they'll always do what they call a run-through. And the joke is that they're going to do a straight run, except they never do a straight run because Terry, maybe Paul, I don't know which of you does it, but you always interrupt. And so there's a joke, we're going to do a straight run. So this morning, they brought me in on this little joke, and we made a bet or a wager. I know you're not supposed to bet in church. This was before church, so it's okay. That if they could do a straight run through, that I had to preach shorter. Well, they made a straight run through, so I'm going to try. I don't know if that'll work. The book of Ecclesiastes is about trying to find satisfaction in life. And when you read through the book of Ecclesiastes, you find that long before the Rolling Stones came out with the song, "I Can't Get No Satisfaction," the wisest man to ever live, Solomon, wrote a book about everywhere he searched, he couldn't find satisfaction. You see, no matter where you're at in life, whether you have very few years of experience or you have a lot of years of experience, everyone is searching for satisfaction. Whether you feel like you have a lot of money, you don't have enough money, you're somewhere in between the two, whether you're married or not married, have kids, don't have kids, whether you're where you want to be in life or you don't want to be where you're at in life, every single person is always trying to find satisfaction. Satisfaction in who we are. You see, we all want to be good enough, don't we? We all want to be smart enough and pretty enough. And we want people to do something to convince us that we are enough, that who we are is enough. We don't have to change. We don't have to get any better because we know our flaws and we try and fix them, but they're there anyway. We just want to know that who we are is enough for them and we're loved anyway. We're all searching for that kind of satisfaction. We all want to have enough money, don't we? Not necessarily to be rich, but enough money. Enough in the sense that we can pay all of our bills, we can meet all of our needs, and some or most of our wants. And we want enough money where we don't have to worry about money. Right? We all want enough work. Some of you are saying, "I don't want any work." But God created us to work. When He created Adam and Eve, He put Adam in the garden to take care of it. The translation is to work. And so, there's something work does for our soul, but it's got to be the right kind of work, right? And it's got to be the right amount of work, because some of us don't have enough work, and when we don't have enough work, if you're like me, you get a little lazy about working. But some of us, on the other hand, have way too much work to do, and work just overwhelms us, and we hate our jobs, and we hate the work that we have, and we just want enough work to satisfy our soul. And all of us want enough time, don't we? Enough time to do what we need to do, but also get to do what we want to do. Because we all experience life crisis moments, and they remind us of what really is most important. And we vow from that moment on that we will keep what is most important, except we all know what happens is that in those difficult moments, the world stops for a little while. But then at some point, your work expects the world to start turning again, whether you're ready for it to or not. And we all want enough time. Well, over the next 4 weeks, including today, we're going to talk about how to have enough. Today is an overview message about enough. Next week is about money. I promise you I won't beat you up. We're not taking a second offering. The offering plate won't be passed after the sermon. Everything will be normal. And I probably won't even talk that much about actually giving to the church. I believe that's a different part of it. But I'm going to talk about how to have enough money. The week after that, I'm going to talk about how to have enough work. It seems strange, but the word in Ecclesiastes is profit, or what is left over. So how to have enough left over when you're done working to have satisfaction in life. And then right before we go into the holiday season, we're going to talk about how to have enough time, how to manage time. I hope that no matter whether the rest of this message bombs or goes really good, that you'll come at least the next 3 weeks and learn how to have enough. See, if you're searching for enough today, you are in good company, because the wisest man to ever live, Solomon, wrote an entire book about it, and we have a journal of his searchings for enough. Now, I wish I could tell you that Solomon helps us a lot, but I'm not sure that he does. He starts out this way in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 2. He says, after I've searched everything, and I'm searching for meaning, purpose in life, I'm searching for enough, I'm searching for satisfaction, he says it's meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. The Message translation says it this way. Paraphrase, I'm sorry. It says, there is nothing for anything. Can you help me, Dan? It's okay. There is nothing to anything. He searches everything there is, and he says, he comes to the conclusion, I can't get no satisfaction. Everything I look. He goes in and he starts talking about nature in Ecclesiastes 1, and he says, you know, the sun sets and the sun rises only for it to do it all over again. Generations come and generations go, but they don't remain, only the earth remains. All the rivers and streams, they flow into the sea, and yet the sea never gets full. And isn't it interesting, he writes, that all the rivers and all the streams, they come from the sea, and then they return to the sea, but nothing ever changes. He says the eye is never full of seeing, the ear is never full of hearing. Everything is meaningless, utterly meaningless. He writes that even our achievements, our accomplishments in life, there's no meaning to them. There's no satisfaction to them. He says, for a while, he said, I gave everything that my eyes desired. That's what I got for myself. Everything that my heart wanted, I refused it no pleasure. And when I was done, I was greater far than anyone in all of Jerusalem. And yet, here's what he says. He said, I made and I bought, I owned and I accumulated all of this wealth. And he said, all of it's meaningless. You know why it's meaningless? Because eventually, someday, you have to give it to somebody who never worked for it. And he says it's all meaningless. Even wisdom itself. He was the wisest man to ever live outside of Jesus himself. God granted him one wish, almost like a genie, and he could have had anything. And Solomon said, I want wisdom. So he had wisdom, but he said even wisdom is foolish, and so is foolishness, because here's the truth. Some people live wise and some people live foolish, but it's all meaningless because the same fate will overtake them all. Man, you read the book of Ecclesiastes and you're like, I don't feel so good about life. Like everything we do, there is no satisfaction, that there is not enough to this thing. You see, some of us have bought into a lie about satisfaction. You and I still believe that somehow we can find satisfaction in the things of life. And here's how we believe it. We believe that if you can add to the good things while taking away from the, subtracting from the bad things, that finally we will have enough and will be satisfied. Let me help you a little bit. Every January, most of us, we decide we're going to try and lose some weight. Because if we lose a little bit of weight, it actually is a gain for us. We feel more confident in who we are. This is why we constantly sometimes buy new clothes, right? Because if we get rid of old clothes and we stay fashionable, we're kind of gaining something, and we can feel good about ourselves, and we can feel good about how others see us, and then ultimately we can feel good before God because we're adding to what we don't have and we're taking away the bad. We think that if we work hard enough, that if we add to the amount that we work, that somehow we'll find satisfaction, we'll achieve what we want to achieve, and then once we get it, we'll feel like we have enough. We do this with money. We want just a little bit more. Except, you all know what happens when we do this, don't you? Is that the more money that we end up getting, the more we end up spending. And there's never enough. Is that no matter how much we feel like we put on new clothes and highlight our hair and do our hair and all these things that every single one of us do, male and female, to kind of help us feel better and look better before others and ourselves. If we've not found satisfaction in who God created us to be, we don't find it in those things, do we? All of it's meaningless. All of it's meaningless. So we're on the same page as Solomon. He goes into chapter 3 and he then sets something up. The reason that everything is meaningless in life, he says, is because everything has a limit. There's a beginning to it and there's an end to it. And because there's a beginning and the end, there's really no point to it. Because if you add to things, in the end, it's going to be taken back away. And if you take away from things, in the end, it's going to be added back in and you're going to equal zero. So why even work to change anything? Why add anything to life? Why take anything away? It doesn't amount to any change in the end. And then he changes tunes a little bit. And he says, well, if everything has a limit, a shelf life, a beginning point and an end point, then there must be a purpose for it. There must be a God-given purpose. And so he talks about in Ecclesiastes 3, it's well quoted, there's a time to be born, and there's a time to die. There's a time to laugh, and there's a time to weep. There's a time to love, and a time to hate, a time to heal, and a time to kill. And we quote these all the way through. And what he's saying is that God gives purpose to the limits of life. And then he comes to Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 9, and I want to read it to us today. So what do workers gain from all their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. I've seen the limits that He's put on humanity. He has made everything beautiful in its time. That word beautiful means appropriate, purpose. He's given meaning and purpose to everything that has a limit in life. And then verse 12. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Watch this. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Translation, God gives purpose to the limits of life, but you and I aren't God, so we don't get to know the purpose for the limits. Just when this guy's starting to give us an answer, we're kind of like, no help. Next slide, please. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. Wait, what's the gift of God? The limit. Didn't you just call that a burden a few verses ago? Yep, he sure did. That we would find satisfaction in the limits. And I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear Him. May God bless the reading of His Word to us today. You see, what Solomon understands is that God gives limits because He gives purpose to the limits. Here's what God knows about humanity. You and I aren't very good at limiting ourselves. Even when we know that by limiting ourselves, it's for our own good. Come on in a little closer. I'm going to help you just a little bit. Do you remember when phone plans first came out? And you bought your minutes. Brooklyn, you remember this when you had to buy your minutes? There was a day where it was awful. You only had a certain amount of minutes. My guess is all your friends would have gone over their minutes. You wouldn't have gone over their minutes, would you? You bought your minutes. And what did we do? We got so many minutes, we said, oh, we will never use that many minutes. And what did we eventually do? Used all those minutes. And so eventually they came out with a plan called, our favorite word in America, unlimited minutes. Well, then once the minutes were unlimited, texting started to become a thing. And you paid per text message. Do you remember this? I spent a fortune in high school because Mom and Dad wouldn't give me a plan. I had to pay per text message. And you can't limit yourself. You just keep going and you think that's a lot of money. But you think, oh, I'll never use that many texts. And you get a plan. And then eventually we use that many texts. And then what do? They gave us an unlimited plan. And then you could have internet on your phone. And what did we say? Oh, we'll never use internet on our phones. We'll buy just the minimum package. We'll never use that amount. And then what do? We use that amount. We went over. We paid overage. It ticked us off. And so they came up with a plan called the unlimited plan. You see, you and I don't do very good with limits. This is why I don't do very good with buffets. One, if it's not very well taken care of, I won't eat there. That's disgusting. But if it's a good buffet, baby, I'll eat there. And I'll eat and eat and eat as if I'm never going to eat another meal again. None of us are good at limits, even when we know that it's the best thing for us. Did you know that everything good God created, He gave a limit to? When God created the world, He saw that it was what? Good. And yet, how did He create it? With limits. Day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, day 7. God could have done it in a single day. He didn't need the sunrise and the sunset to reset His mind so He wasn't tired to create the next day. He just knew that the way this thing should operate, it operates best when it operates in limits. Stay with me. When God created the Garden of Eden, did you know the Garden of Eden was a limit? Because there was creation and life outside of that garden. We know that because eventually Adam and Eve are banished from the garden and they have to live outside of it. But the garden was a limit in and of itself. And inside the garden there was another limit. They could eat from any tree, but they could not eat from one tree, the tree of knowledge of good and of evil. God didn't put limits in place because He needed to be limited. He puts limits in place because you and I need to be limited. Because what did Adam and Eve do? They broke the limits. They couldn't limit themselves. Just like you and I. So what Solomon is trying to get us to understand is that everything in life has a limit. And that the best way for you and I to live is to learn to live within the limits that God has given us to live in. The best way to live, the only way to satisfaction, the only way to learning to live with enough is to live within the limits God has given us to live. To be able to say, if I needed more of it, He would have given it. If I have too much of it, He would have taken some away. But I believe in a God who gives me just enough. And then Solomon writes about one thing. There's only one thing that is not limitless. Everything else God gives us is limited. But the one thing, did you see it in the Scripture? But He has set eternity in the human heart. Now the heart is not just the organ. It's the place where your attitude, your thoughts, your desires, your personality, your soul, everything is together. That's the understanding in Scripture. So watch what God does. He puts eternity, that which has no beginning and no end, limitless, into a limited body. So that our natural desire, the only thing that will satisfy, is that which is limitless. Come on, I'm right there and you're checking out on me. Stay with me. Stay with me. I know I'm not. I need more stories or something today. I don't have them. That which is limitless is the only thing that will satisfy because everything else is limited. And the only thing that is limitless is God Himself. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He came and He made His dwelling among us, but more than that, He came and He has made His dwelling in us. And He has given us a taste of that which is limitless, which is of Himself, so that all the things in life that are limited can never satisfy what is limitless. It creates within us a holy discontent. That word is a word, that phrase was coined by Bill Hybels, pastor of Willow Creek Church, and just a massive church, but it's a beautiful phrase. And here's what holy discontent means. It means to be discontent enough that you desire change. Yet if the change never happens, you will remain content. A holy discontent. It's that there is something inside of us that's limitless, but we're surrounded by that which is limited. and we're always longing for that which is eternal. And so we're longing for things to change, but at the same time, if they never change, we're saying, this is enough. I can be content with what you have. You see how that works? God, if you never give me a job that has a raise, if I never get another job in my raise, I will take it as this. It is enough. I desire to make more. That desire is not wrong. But if you never grant the desire, you are enough. It's the only way to satisfaction. So how do we deal with this? Two ways. First, I think you and I have to identify the limits that we're in. The limits always represent a time or a season in our life. God stirs this discontent in us for a couple of reasons. First is because sometimes we need to change. I believe holy discontent is the same thing as conviction. When there is something in our heart and life that is not completely in line with the Father, He begins to work and move and penetrate and say, you really need to work on your patience. You really need to work on your gossip. You really need to work on your anger. And when I say you, I'm speaking as if God's speaking to all of us. I probably just listed some things that maybe at times I have struggled with. So sometimes your dissatisfaction with something is a sign that something needs to change in you, that something needs to change in me. There are other times that this holy discontent happens, that something is not needed to be changed in you, but God is about to change something in your life. I don't believe God causes a lot of things that He gets blamed for. I believe the world is enough of a mess that He can let messes be messes and He can still use messes to do miracles with. But there are times that He will create a discontent in your job. Not because there's anything wrong with your job, but because there's another job He wants you to move you to, but you would never move if you remain content with where you are. That's getting good. There are times He reveals things in your relationships with people. There's nothing wrong in your relationship, but you're not content with where you're at in your marriage, where you're at with your kids, where you're at with your coworkers. And He starts moving and working because He's about to change something, and you and I could never get to the next level if it wasn't for this lack of satisfaction. The second thing, and it ties into the first that we have to do, this is really the point of it all, is to learn to trust God to be enough. And it's back to what I told you about holy discontent. It's saying, God, I wish you would change this, but if you never change it, I trust you to be enough. Here's the hard part about the seasons of life that we encounter in humanity. We never get to choose them. Have you noticed that? We can't slow down time and say, no, I think I want to be a kid a little bit longer. No, when you're no longer a kid, you kind of no longer a kid. And when you decide, we decide, you know what, I think I'm going to stay on the laughter side, not the mourning side. I'm going to stay on the healing side, not the war side. Because you and I would never choose the war side. Some people would, but they got evil in them. The people God created, the way He created them, we would always choose the good. And so some of you are in seasons that you would never choose for yourself. And here's where you really have to trust God. I wish there was a better answer. I wrestled all week for a better answer. I didn't get one, and here it is. We're trusting that even in the seasons we don't want to be in, God has a purpose for it. And if He never does anything else, we trust His purpose. Because His purpose is enough. His purpose is enough. Is He enough for you? Is He enough for me? If God never did anything else in your life, in my life, if He never answered another one of our prayers, He never gave us another blessing. Could we truly say in our soul and in our heart of hearts, God, You are enough. What You have done for me is more than I deserve, and it is enough. God is enough. I want you to know that. He is always enough. He's enough today. He'll be enough tomorrow. He will be enough in the future. You don't have to add anything to your life. You don't have to subtract anything from your life until He's the one who tells you to do it. Until that time, you are enough in the eyes of God. You are a child of the King. He loves you. He adores you. He is crazy about you. He will never let anything come to you that He will not help you through and see you through and tell you, not only are you enough, but I'm enough, and what you're going through, there is a purpose that will last into all of eternity. You can't see it, but will you trust Me? Because I'll be enough for you. I'll be enough for you. You know, the promises of Scripture are not old. They are ever present. That means if God promised it in Scripture, that it is still a promise to us today. It wasn't, oh, I'll promise this and keep it once. Oh no, I promise this and I will keep it over and over and over and over again. And when it comes to His presence, here is His promise. When it comes to Him being enough, here is His promise. It is not dependent upon the promise keeper. It's dependent upon the promise maker. And He's got a track record of never failing anyone. Will you trust Him to be enough today?